Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Prometheus by Roman Prokofiev, translated by Irene Woodhead and Neil P. Woodhead, narrated by Phil Thron. Prologue. Even as I write these lines, the disseminator is already in orbit. It's less than an hour until our own takeoff. So, this is something I would like you to know, you who will inhabit this planet once we're gone. People, in the future, you'll almost certainly look for the reasons that made us take this step, but you won't find them. You might call us fruitcakes, the victims of Stellar, a bunch of lowlifes who abandoned you to your own fates. Alternatively, you might laud us as fearless heroes who sacrificed their lives in the name of humanity. All of this is true, and yet false at the same time. It's very difficult for me to explain what exactly I and probably all of us feel. There are just no suitable words to describe it in the human language. The only thing I want to make perfectly clear to all who read this is that we're doing it free from any order or mental control. We fully realize all the consequences of this step and are acting of our own free will. This was our own joint decision, as well as the personal choice of each and every one of us. We're incarnators, after all. We are the First Legion, which isn't just a bunch of empty words. I've no idea how our upcoming trip to the Black Moon might pan out, be it a victory or a failure. Not that it matters. What does matter is that we're in it together. The bonds of Stellar which unite us are such that none of us could even contemplate staying behind while everybody else leaves, including Stellar itself. The Bynashe call us a dead swarm. We may resemble a swarm, but it's not quite dead yet. We are very much alive. We're human. Always remain human, as Prometheus used to say. These words can have many meanings, but right now, their message is perfectly clear to all of us incarnators. You who are reading these lines, remember, we're about to face death because we want to stay human. Ave. Castor, Stellar's Grand Stratego, Standard Bearer of the First Legion. Chapter 1. The morning turned out to be cloudless and sweltering. The sun beat down mercilessly. Even though one couldn't really notice the change of seasons at the city's latitude due to all the climate changes, the advent of summer was becoming more tangible. Our last summer on planet Earth. An atypical, solemn silence hung over the usually noisy and crowded esplanade. Silent were the human masses filling the sidewalks, roofs, and observation balconies. Silent were the hundreds of incarnators lined up in their square centuria formations on Prometheum's flagstones. Today there were no human legionnaires on the parade square. All of them were now busy guarding the square's accesses and security perimeter. Today, only the immortals graced the esplanade with their presence. I could see each one of them from my vantage point up on the high rostrum in the shade of the giant statue of Prometheus. I could see the old-timers who surrounded me like a thick wall. I could also see the Legion's newcomers, both the Cube's ex-convicts and the children of the recently relaunched Incarnation Project, all of whom had come back to this place in the city today in order to swear their oaths of allegiance to the First Legion. Because the Legion wasn't just a fancy faction with an ancient name, it was part of Stellar's closed military hierarchy. So even though our noobs had been considered part of the Legion before, they still needed to officially swear their enlistment oaths in order to become the system's fully-fledged members. The same old oath, whose words had become sacred to those rare few who still remembered Prometheus's previous incarnation. We'd almost finished all the preparations for the ritual. My psi field expanded over the silent esplanade, registering the trepidation of thousands of minds. Almost all of the incarnators could also sense my mental touch, instinctively reaching out toward it. Just like during that fateful council back in the Needle Tower, I didn't even try to restrain myself. All of them, Incas and humans alike, had to see me and sense the purity of my intentions. And they had to remember this day. Despite all the difficulties we'd had, like the cube's dubious legacy and the resistance put up by both the cats and the zealots, we'd done sterling work completing the task. A new generation of incarnators had been born and was standing here now before me as the tangible and visible result of the decisions we'd made. The absolute majority of them had already made their first evolution. Quite a few had made it through to their second one, while a few uniquely gifted ones had even reached their third, which was an absolutely fantastic result to achieve in less than a year. According to the curriculum we'd come up with for them in Timis, each of them had been assigned one of the 12 specializations and received a customized set of genomes to go with it. Their combat groups of three were joined to form larger teams of 12 Incas each. Such tactical units could work independently from each other and were quite interchangeable in any situation. Combined with the standardized Alpha class equipment, such system allowed for the harmonization of all Incas. Instead of 1,000 individual personalities, we now had an army of almost identical superhumans who might be a tad too gray and uniform compared to the original First Legion, but was infinitely more effective in battle. Our recent experience in Alert, closing here on Earth, had already shown that we were moving in the right direction. Miko had gone out of her way to doll herself up. Clad in full dress uniform, her tunic stern, her black beret sporting the three-pointed star of Stellar, her augmented reality icon floated up into the corner of my field of vision.
"Let's get on with it, Gray."
A hoarse command resounded over the esplanade, repeatedly echoed by the unit commanders. The first line of Incas stepped forward and froze before me, dropping simultaneously to one knee. The coal-black armor of their brand-new predator suits glistened with silvery titanium plates. Veined with the bright blue of azuric conduits, they offered a gleaming echo into the wealth of technologies long forgotten in the world at large. The flank marker raised his right hand and said in a loud and clear voice, looking up at me, "I, Whirlwind, a Stellar's incarnator, do solemnly declare my allegiance to the First Legion, embodied or bodiless, dead or alive, regardless of my current shape or guise, I hereby swear to always oppose evil and defy fear in protection of humankind." His words thundered all over the esplanade, reflected off the Prometheum's walls and memorials. I came down from the rostrum, walking through the Inca's parting ranks until I reached Whirlwind and touched his bowed head. The giant statue of Prometheus watched us, immobile and solemn, as we stood under its outstretched arm, proffering a single tongue of fire. The predatory silhouette of Avenger was hanging real low in the sky just above it. The silence, hovering over the square, was so deafening that I could hear my own heartbeat. "I accept your oath, Whirlwind." A ghostly, augmented reality chart appeared in my view, to which a new glowing green line had just added to it. Whirlwind must have seen it too in his own interface, because his psi field exploded with triumph. He stood up and saluted crisply, "Ave, Gray." "First Legion. Mission updated. Incarnator enrollment progress. 218 of 1,000. The First Legion's control interface, which Miko had already adapted to my own needs, listed thousands of Incas as well as possessed ones, most of whom had been previously sworn in Prometheus's time. Most of them were now marked as out of commission, their names marked with the little icons of KIA, MIA, or POW. The few survivors were a rare show of occasional green lines in the long crimson list of codenames. When I'd located the Bullet Star and got full access to this particular mission, we'd had less than 200 survivors. Still, lots of old boys had come back since from all the corners of the earth, either answering my call or being hunted down by the cats. This had been one of Rashidov's conditions, and this time his clan had put themselves out with no pretense. On top of that, we'd spent the last few months actively searching for all First Legion dropouts, trying to lure them back into the ranks. Admittedly, it hadn't been easy, but still we'd managed to book some results. Almost all of the Incas previously banished had come back to the city now, and as for zealots and other renegades, most of them had been either reset or exterminated. We had no doubt that there were still a few ex-Incas unaccounted for, but their numbers were now negligible, and without the stellar system, sooner or later they would all end up over the edge. In the meantime, the Incas of Whirlwind's group continued to take their oaths one after another.
I, Princess, a Stellar's Incarnator.
I, Hefe. I, Piercer.
I, Storm Petrel.
Every oath uttered added a new green line to my list. I accepted each one of them, looking them straight in the eye, but saw only my own reflection, a luminous Inca looking very much like an angel with outstretched wings. Strangely enough, the psi field that united us also betrayed the vague anxiety which offset the solemnity of their trepidation. They were worried not for their own lives, but for mine, because I was the stitch that had sewn them together, giving them purpose and uniting them in a single goal. They dreaded to even think what could happen if this bond was broken. Despite all of my powers, they viewed me as someone in need of protection, especially those who'd been with me in Argentum, and would gladly give their own lives in doing so.
What an incredible feeling, especially if you remembered their true identities.
A new combat group stepped forward, replacing them. And yet another, and another. As I uttered their names, I touched them with my psi field, while Miko showed me their old biographies, the true stories of those who were now becoming part of the First Legion. The petite Sybil was, in fact, Anne Baby Doll Blair, who used to run one of Zealot's most slaughterous cults, terrorizing the whole of Neo Mumbai. She was one of Lefty's apprentices who'd summoned Indigo Queen to our world. As a cube prisoner, she'd been kept under the Alpha seal. The slow and seemingly gentle giant Slumber, one of the finest warriors among our new recruits, was none other than Peacekeeper, a Siberian renegade whom the Incas of the Bear Halls had once declared an outlaw for all the crimes he'd committed, locked up under the Beta seal. Blaze, a gifted enchanter who showed great promise, a true prodigy among our new recruits, he was in fact Glenn Knife Mitchell, who'd slain thousands of people in gladiatorial arenas down south, not mentioning dozens of Incas. He was also a Beta. And this lanky young man with sunken cheeks and a mop of silvery hair was none other than the former mentor of the Undying Pack, who'd been the object of our strictest surveillance, an ex-Alpha convict, and the leader of the eliminated clan to which our Alice had once belonged. Against all expectations, he'd passed all the stages of training without drawing attention to himself. A mediocre all-rounder who didn't stand out in the crowd of Timmis cadets.
He might have been exposed to some identity-altering trigger in the past in order to become the mentor of such a large community. In order to complicate their animifications, we'd made sure that almost all of the Cube's ex-inmates had received the kinds of genomes and specializations diametrically opposed to those they'd originally had, which might have played a certain role in his development. Admittedly, things were much easier for those who'd just stepped out of the new Incarnation Project mold. Virtually all of them were the Legion's former rank and file, its veterans as well as the clan's elite, who'd taken this step consciously and willingly, fully aware of their own life stories. We weren't expecting any unpleasant surprises from that quarter. Arachne had even suggested leaving them back down on Earth, but after some consideration, we had decided against it, mainly because of Rashidov's rather harsh conditions concerning the return of the Ark ship. One of his caveats was the mobilization of all the Incas currently on Earth. Rashidov. My face didn't even twitch, even though the sheer memory of him made me want to cringe. The Gideon was currently traveling somewhere between Earth and Mars, its blind spot mode concealing it from any prying eyes. We just couldn't predict what was going on in the cat's leader's mind. The system directives he'd received prevented him from taking the ship back to Earth, while I, for my part, had never accepted his ultimatum, which was why, even though our key interests were the same, we'd failed to come to an agreement, despite all the curious information we'd gleaned from him. Our ultimate goals were the same. We needed to get rid of the Black Moon. Rashidov the cat wanted to use Stellar's nucleus to control it, but this was exactly what the Binachet wanted, too. The First Legion had to choose which one of them to ultimately support. So I rejected Kat's proposal, seeing as we'd already had a contract with Sophia, originally sealed by Prometheus and renewed by myself. Both options appeared shady enough, but breaking an oath without good reason was worse than trying to keep a foot in both camps. Still, we shouldn't disregard the possibility of things changing once we'd reached the Black Moon. Our current allies might well turn into our enemies, forcing us to look for new options. Predictably, Rashidov hadn't been particularly happy about it. Although we'd eventually managed to come to some semblance of a compromise, it was so shaky I didn't even want to think about it. Once the First Legion had left the city, its inhabitants would have to deal with the slippery feline brotherhood on their own. Good luck with that. I continued to swear in unit after unit, adding new names and icons to the faction list. Identical phrases merged into a monotonous soliloquy, but the bystanders stayed put, enchanted by the spectacle. Having become part of the First Legion, new Incas stepped back into the ranks. My psi field throbbed with new flashes of sacred ecstasy. All of the new recruits were different, but right now they all felt like brothers and sisters in spirit, virtually indistinguishable from our old-timers. I was pretty sure that both Wrath and Icicle would have loved to have stood in our ranks today, too. But unfortunately, they were the only known exceptions amongst Stellar's Incas who weren't here with us today. 900. 995. 998. After the 1,000th Inca had been added to the First Legion, Miko gave a solemn salute devoid of her habitual sarcastic theatrics. Simultaneously, a new icon added to my interface, signaling the mission's successful completion. The First Legion, personal mission completed. You've received an extraordinary promotion, Grand Stratego. Reward received, a blue star. You've received the banner of the First Legion. It looked like we'd done it after all. I didn't need to visit a Stellar's terminal in order to claim my rewards. I had my own terminal embedded in the gauntlet, so all Miko had to do was activate it. A new item materialized in my right hand, a long, segmented baton fashioned out of blue steel, whose design was eerily reminiscent of that of the gauntlet, as well as some other items of Prometheus's handiwork. Despite it being a facsimile of the Neo-Gothic style, you could immediately feel that its dainty, laconic forms were the fruits of high technology. The top of its embossed metallic shaft was fashioned as a three-pointed star. I'd seen this legendary phantom banner before, albeit only in pictures and on video, but I'd never thought that it would one day be fluttering above my head. This particular artifact had been considered lost on the Black Moon. Still, Prometheus, ever the provident type, had left a replica in Stellar's storage, and probably more than one. As I could now see with my own eyes, the banner wasn't just a symbol, but yet another tool of faction control built by the greatest technomancer of all time. The Banner of the First Legion, an Azure Artifact, Replica. Composition: Blue Steel. Xeno Artifacts. Living Matter. Communications Bridge. Allows you to control and communicate with the First Legion, ensuring general network communication and permitting subvocal contact with any of the faction's elements. The potential of its transmission range is only limited by one's A-energy expenditure. Ability type: active. Cost: from 1 to infinite Azure per minute. Uses the artifact's own Azuric reserves. Breath of Glory: creates a powerful mental field which protects you against any external psi attacks. It also has a unifying effect, allowing you to support the combat spirit of all the First Legion's Incas within its range. The ability's effective radius is only limited by one's A-energy expenditure. Ability type: passive. Cost: from 1 to infinite Azure per minute. Uses the artifact's own Azuric reserves. Azure Absorber: in case of an emergency, allows you to absorb A energy from the surrounding environment, creating your own Azuric reserves. Ability type: active. Maximum capacity: 10 million Azure. Current contents: 0 of 10 million Azure. Although the artifact came with only 3 abilities, all of them were useful and extremely powerful, and all of them required ever-increasing amounts of A-energy. In creating the banner, Prometheus had undoubtedly had the Black Moon in mind, where conventional transmitters and net-centric control systems just wouldn't work. Under such conditions, the ability to maintain operative communications was priceless. Ditto for keeping up the Inca's combat spirit. Had the banner been kept in our main camp and not on board the Roncevaux, where Siegfried kept it under lock and key, the possessed ones might have kept their morale too. The fact that Prometheus had somehow managed to tie the artifact's power to its ability to absorb Azure was another brilliant solution of his. If you think of it, the Black Moon was one big A-zone, so it made sense to siphon its Azure, thus using its own power against itself. By the same token, we couldn't activate the banner straight away because its battery was empty. Then the same strange thing happened to me again. I froze, unable to move a finger. The familiar black screen lit up but for a moment before me, followed by a familiar, husky voice. "Thank you," Prometheus said wearily. "I didn't doubt for one moment that you'd do everything right. Because you are myself, really, so it couldn't have been otherwise. Well then, apparently the time has come. There's just one last step left to take. Miko, this is an order from the Grand Legate." He must have done something because the icon of the Binachet Dominant lit up, activating. Then he left, dissipated without a trace, returning the control over my body back to me. It had only lasted a split second. The Incas filling the square hadn't noticed anything at all, blinded by the aura of the breath of glory. Miko wasn't too forthcoming with explanations, either.
Gray, this was the signal to... Never mind, you'll soon find out. But first of all, we need to finish off the swearing-in. You need to choose a standard-bearer, please.
I was in no mood to object, even though Prometheus's constant neural seal activations had already begun to test my patience. I swung round to face the Incas standing behind me. 100 First Legion veterans, both Possessed and Stellar's Incas alike. My closest friends stood right at the front, a very tense Alice, an unusually serious Raven, a beaming Helios, Corvin, Raksha, Cannibal, Tempest, Aether, Cersei, who gave me a deep, knowing look. My choice was made the moment I looked at them. I couldn't have it any other way. I took several steps, stopping in front of Castor, who towered two heads above me. Agni and Flavius instinctively stepped aside as the blue steel of the banner's staff struck the flagstones below, sending sparks flying across the pavement. "Take it, Castor," I said. "From now on, you are the standard-bearer of the First Legion." This was, in fact, a very honorable rank. The standard-bearer was, in fact, the second Inca in the whole faction, the chief of staff, and the keeper of the Legion's main regalia. But most importantly, the First Legion's hierarchy designated the standard-bearer as its leader's fully-fledged successor, entitled to take on his predecessor's responsibilities in case of his death. All of the Legion's former standard-bearers had perished back on the Black Moon, the last one being the legendary Siegfried, who was in command of that particular stellar op. For a few moments, Castor just stood there, staring strangely at me, his gaze a mixture of hope and fear. Then he reached out and gripped the staff just above my own hand. "I accept," he said. "It will be an honor. Ave, Gray." His status had now changed, too. I could see the banner's settings adding to his interface. As soon as we poured some azure into the banner to activate it, its ghostly ensign would start fluttering over the Legion's massed ranks. Still, we didn't get the chance to enjoy the solemnity of the moment. I suddenly received an alarming message. The star, Arachne. This was an alert. Her hologram only appeared after a few moments, activated by one of the Inca's transmitters.
"Gray, our sensors are registering some unusual Shea activity in the Fiordas region," Arachne reported, not wasting any time on greetings. "They've all just got up and started moving, and we don't know the reason for it. Nothing like this has ever been observed."
Arachne cast a quick sideways glance and added,
"We're registering the start of some tectonic activity of an anomalous nature. Its source is located in the upper layer of the Earth's crust. I'm going to forward you the sensor's own stream."
A new 3D projection unfolded before us. It showed the shapeless black spot of the disseminator against the white, hazy backdrop of Fiordas's glaciers. It was approaching at a breakneck speed until it zoomed in, allowing us to make out a huge vortex formed by the Shea's tiny bodies, pouring into the open hexagonal cells of this giant fragment of the Black Moon. The disseminator itself was shuddering, as if convulsing, the surrounding ice rapidly developing huge fissures as the hundreds of years' worth of built-up ice thunderously crumbled apart. The anthracite surface of that giant beehive was streaked with glowing veins of azure. The thousands of little black dots of the Bina Shea kept moving, obeying a clearly predetermined pattern. Their flow was thinning out as they kept streaming in, disappearing into the depths of their makeshift anthill, while the disseminator's throbbing grew even stronger, as if it was trying to break free from its icy prison.
"What the hell's going on?"
a voice shouted behind my back. "It looks like they're
Sample complete. Ready to continue?